Hello, this is Chair Ruth Richardson. Pursuant to House Rule 10.01, I call this remote meeting of the Education Policy Committee to order. The clerk will take the roll for attendance.
Chair Richardson?
Present.
Vice Chair Hassan?
Present.
Representative Erickson?
Erickson, present.
Representative Bennett?
Present.
Representative Berg?
Present.
Representative Bow?
Present.
Representative Christensen?
Present.
Representative Drazkowski?
Present.
Representative Edelson?
Present.
Representative Feist?
Present.
Representative Frazier?
Present.
Representative Jordan?
Jordan, present.
Representative Keeler?
Present.
Representative Moeller?
Present.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller, present.
Representative Poston?
Poston, present.
Representative Scott?
Present.
Representative Erdahl?
Present.
Representative Wozlawick?
Present.
Madam Chair, a quorum is present.
Thank you. Representative Poston, have you had an opportunity to review the minutes from our February 2nd meeting?
I have, Chair Richardson, and I would like to move those minutes.
Thank you so much, Representative Poston. Members, if you could unmute, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The minutes are approved. Today we'll be hearing House File 2950, a bill that Vice Chair Hassan will be presenting for us related to educator support, crisis online learning, and a short call substitute teacher pilot. Vice Chair Hassan, would you like to move House File 2950 to be referred to the General Register?
So move, Madam Chair.
I also understand that you have an A1 amendment. Would you like to move that amendment to get the bill in the form that you prefer?
So move, Madam Chair.
Members, if you could unmute once again, all in favor of adopting the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Just as a note, members, we will have a time certain vote on this bill by 2:25 p.m. Today. And with that, Vice Chair Hassan, please explain your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. Today I present to you House File 2950, an act relating to education, providing for educator support, crisis online learning, and a 1.3 short call substitute teacher pilot. As we all know, this is the third school year we have started in the midst of pandemic. Districts across the state and across the country have yet to solve crippling staff shortages that have forced a range of drastic adjustments. Here are a few examples of how desperate school districts are and how they're able to make ends meet. In Vermont, school board members are grabbing sponges and buckets to help short staff custodial crew. In Nevada, principals are covering classrooms and vacuuming hallways. One is even cleaning toilets. In Massachusetts, National Guard troops have climbed behind the wheels to get kids from home to school. Around the country, teachers are missing planning periods to cover for absent colleagues, and the demand for substitute has skyrocketed. Here in Minnesota, with recent staff shortage in schools across the state, districts have taken various measures to adapt, including emailing parents about filling temporary substitute roles, adding days to winter breaks, and reaching out to retired teachers to fill for long-term positions. In my home district in Minneapolis, there were over hundreds of teachers calling in sick in any given day. House File 2950 includes several provisions intended to respond to the urgent need facing public schools due to an ongoing pandemic. Since the end of the governor's peacetime emergency powers, schools have been required to maintain some form of in-person learning for a student despite facing staff shortage and high COVID caseloads among their students and staff population. With that, Madam Chair, I'll let someone from the department do a walkthrough of the bill, maybe Adosh or the commissioner.
Thank you, Vice Chair Hassan. And before we call on your testifiers, I will also let members know that we'll keep track of any hands that are raised, and we will have discussion after public testimony. And I also understand that Representative Mueller has an amendment as well, and so we'll let her walk through that amendment prior to starting member questions. So with that, we will turn it over to, I believe it's Commissioner Mueller.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Richardson and committee members. As you said, my name is Heather Mueller, and I'm the commissioner with the Department of Education. And I have the appreciate having the opportunity to speak with you briefly before our MDE colleague, Adosh Uni, walks through the bill language. As many of you know, the pandemic has exacerbated a number of issues facing our workforce globally, as well as, more specifically, shined a spotlight on workforce shortages in education. Our schools are facing a crisis like we've never seen before. As a former teacher and the wife of a current teacher, I know that our workforce has stretched thin prior to the pandemic, and it is now truly at a breaking point. I think people in our workforce would actually agree that our profession is not only at a breaking point, but some of the professionals working in education are also themselves at a breaking point. Knowing this, we need to provide immediate relief for our workforce so that they can focus on doing what they do best, meeting the needs of each and every Minnesota student. As a result, we are approaching this through both a budgetary allocation and an education staffing support policy package to meet the immediate and long-term needs of our education workforce. Governor Walz has allocated more than $750,000 of his flexible federal funds to provide some immediate relief to our schools, including funding to Pelsby for human resources and IT needs to increase capacity for processing substitute teacher applications, as well as new teacher applications. In addition to these budgetary supports, we have identified a short-term emergency support, no-cost policy package that we want to partner with the legislature on to pass and implement immediately. And we believe that it is possible because of the conversations that we've had with members on both sides of the aisle. The education staffing support policy package includes critical bill language to support a short call substitute teacher pilot, a grace period for new teachers, and a provision to allow previously licensed educators whose license has lapsed to re-enter the profession. Additionally, we've always known that in-person learning is best for our students, and the pandemic has reinforced this for our students, our families, and our staff. With that being said, this package also includes policy recommendations to add crisis language to the Online Learning Option Act statute and a temporary change for e-learning days. These language updates give our school leaders the local control and flexibility they need when a crisis occurs, like when pipes burst in a building, a deer runs through the school, or there's no heat in the building. This language allows school leaders to utilize every tool in their toolbox while also maintaining continuity of learning versus having non-learning student days. All of these critical supports, in addition to our longer-term solutions that were announced a couple of weeks ago, including reducing the financial burden for aspiring teachers through programs like Grow Your Own and covering the costs of exams and licensures, will help our schools navigate the crisis that we're facing. I'm also hopeful that by implementing these policy solutions, we will not only meet the immediate needs of our schools, but also learn new and innovative ways to build out our education workforce and find new pathways into the teaching profession. Now, as we share these immediate solutions, I want to be very clear that these in no way insinuate that we believe that anyone can be or should be teachers. As a classroom teacher, I honor this profession and the highly educated professionals in our classrooms across this state. While we want to protect the integrity of our profession, we also know that in this crisis, we need help. And this gives us the opportunity to pilot pathways that may expand and diversify our workforce. This is something that we all agree we need to address. I'm grateful for the conversations that I've had with legislators on both sides of the aisle on this, because it's not a partisan issue. This is about supporting our students in their learning. I appreciate the time. My colleague, Director of Government Relations, Adosh Uni, is willing to do a walkthrough of the bill if you deem it appropriate and helpful. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner Mueller. Ms. Uni, if you could introduce yourself for the record and do a walkthrough, please. Thank you.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Ado Shudi. I'm the Director of Government Relations for the Minnesota Department of Education. Thank you for the opportunity to just do a really brief walkthrough of the bill section by section. I'll just kind of talk generally about it. And then if there are any questions, we can take those afterwards. So section one is titled Crisis Online Learning. This is an amendment to the Online Learning Options Act. This would be an ongoing change, effective immediate on bill passage. And this would allow districts to shift to online learning in the event of a crisis, such as a pandemic, a natural disaster, or any other event that's out of the hand, or emergency event, crisis event that's outside the hands of the district or charter. The district outside of, for future years, would have to create a plan for this crisis online learning, and it would have to describe how they are going to deliver learning in online, as well as provide for critical components such as nutrition services, access to internet, access to devices, and assuring that students with disabilities receive services. The plan would have to be created before the school year, as well as shared with parents, except for this school year until the end of this school year. Section two is crisis e-learning. This would add up to 5 e-learning days for this school year, the 21-22 school year, without the need to for districts that haven't already created a plan and gone through the other components required to get e-learning days that are currently allowed under statute. And this would require a district to accommodate students without internet, provide devices, as well as provide accessible options for students who receive special education services. And again, this would expire on June 30th, 2022. Section three is the short call substitute teacher pilot program. This would be effective day after passage and last until February 15th of 2023. This would allow school district or charter school to jointly and an applicant to jointly request from Pelsby for a short call substitute license in any content area. The applicant has to meet the following requirements: have an associate's degree or equivalent, be enrolled in a teacher prep program, or have been employed as a support professional, support personnel or paraprofessional for at least one academic year, and have at least a high school diploma. And that the district has to prove that it is going to provide substitute training to the applicant and has requested a background check under 123B03, the local background check statute. This would allow then Pelsby to issue a temporary license pending a background check that Pelsby does. That is generally required, or that is required for all teacher licensure applicants, but then allows them the authority to immediately suspend or revoke the license based on the background check results. Pelsby would be required to issue or deny the license within 5 days of receiving it, and Pelsby would be able to prioritize these applications, but that prioritization is effective except between June 15th and September 1st of 2022. And then this would limit the assignments to 15, limit the assignments in place of a teacher of record to 15 consecutive days. But for an applicant who is in a teacher prep program, they'd be limited to 2 days per week and also have to receive credit towards student teaching hours. Section four is for educator lapsed licenses. This would allow an individual who's had a lapsed license to accept a teaching position without meeting their renewal requirements, and they would have until June 30th, 2023 to be able to meet those requirements to have a continuing license. And then the final section is for a conditional tier three license. This would require Pelsby to issue 1 year conditional tier three license to new teacher applicants. And those that have completed a teacher prep program between July 31st of last year up until June 30th of 2025. And this is for those that are otherwise qualified but have not yet passed a required licensure exam, and that would be basic skills, content, or pedagogy. And this section would expire June 30th, 2025. Madam Chair, that completes the walkthrough of the bill.
Thank you for the walkthrough. I will note for members that Pelsby is also standing by for questions as well when we get to the question and answer component today. Moving on to public testimony. First up, we have Matt Shaver, Policy Director with Ed Allies. If you could introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Chair Richardson, members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Matt Shaver, Policy Director at Ed Allies, a statewide education advocacy nonprofit dedicated to supporting every child in Minnesota to have a rigorous and engaging education. I'm here today to speak on sections 3, 4, and 5 of House File 2950 as amended. I've met with 12 members of this committee so far in 2022, and the issue of sub shortages has come up in nearly all of those conversations. Not having enough folks supporting the stable staffing and learning environments in our schools is a major barrier to quality learning opportunities for students. What happens when a school does not have a sub to cover for the day is that teachers are asked to give up prep time that they never really can get back. Classes are combined, students wind up in auditoriums or cafeterias, staring at laptops, or other educators are pulled away from their primary responsibilities to cover classes. In a staffing pinch, what do we think counselors are being forced to do instead of counseling students? What do we think reading interventionists are being forced to do instead of supporting struggling readers? What do we think English learner educators are being forced to do instead of supporting language development? Once again, it's our marginalized students punished by systemic inaction. We do not have enough eligible people to sub in our schools. Our bachelor's degree eligibility requirement is arbitrary, it's out of step with neighboring states, and a barrier to stable learning for students. We support the provisions in Section 3 on lines 2.26 through 3.24 that would allow Minnesotans with associate's degrees, students in teacher preparation programs, and paraprofessionals to support our schools as subs. This newly eligible pool of potential subs is a proportionally more diverse group of people than we have teaching in schools right now. I want to thank Representative Hassan for including this in the bill, as well as Representative Mueller, who's been leading on this issue since last year. Getting something done for this school year requires urgency and bipartisanship. This can't wait till May and can't be waylaid by politics. An easily fixable issue with Section 3 is the end date for the expanded eligibility. Line 3.25 would mean that any new sub that comes to support our schools using the expanded eligibility will be pushed out in the middle of next school year for no reason. Maybe a political deadline makes sense within the virtual walls of our legislature, but it does not make sense for kids and educators. Why would we make it so the same person who could sub in our schools on February 14th, 2023, not be able to sub in our schools on February 16th, 2023? Imagine the unnecessary disruption inaction would cause. The eligibility should be extended at least through the next school year. Sections 4 and 5 illustrate the need for our state to commit to our tiered licensure structure. The proposed provisions provide solutions to problems that are already solved within our tiered licensure system, and at the same time would create two new and unnecessary licenses. We don't need to layer on additional complexity when the pathways to the classroom already exist. Educators with lapsed licenses can already teach in our schools with a Tier 2 license. Prospective educators who graduate between now and 2025, struggling to pass exams, can teach with a Tier 2 license. I struggle to understand why we must return to the legislature each year and argue that a Tier 2 license is not a scarlet letter. And yet here we are. Chair Richardson, members of the committee, thank you for your time and thank you all for your public service.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Caitlin Snyder with Education Minnesota. And on deck, we'll have Kristen Damer. Caitlin Snyder, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Caitlin Snyder with Education Minnesota. Vice Chair Hassan started this hearing talking about some national stories about shortages facing our schools. And I had been reading the Argus Reader over the weekend talking about how the substitute shortage has caused a number of districts across South Dakota to switch to remote learning. As members of the Minnesota legislature, you may not be aware, but our neighbor South Dakota has no requirement for licensing substitute teachers, and still they are facing the same shortage that we do. We understand the immediate crisis we are in. Second to students, no one is more harmed by the lack of substitutes than our members. We appreciate the definite end date in the bill and would comment that the proposal would be stronger with a reporting requirement to see if this actually helps fill any positions. We also appreciate the inclusion of language protecting hourly workers and collective bargaining agreements. Members, we have a bus driver shortage, a lunchroom shortage, an education support professional shortage, and yes, a teacher shortage. There are large challenges facing our schools today. I look forward to coming back to committee to talk about how to provide more time to teach so teachers can have lesson plans available to substitutes should they be out of the classroom, or how to ensure school personnel can take sick time if they need to limit the spread of COVID-19 in our schools, or how to improve the working conditions of educators to make the field more enticing in a tight job market, or how we can keep teachers, particularly our teachers of color who lead the profession at rates almost twice as high as white teachers, in the classroom. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Kristen Damer with the Moorhead Public Schools, and on deck, we have Deb Hinton. Kristen Damer, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Kristen Damer. I'm the Executive Director of Human Resources and Operations for the Moorhead Area Public School District. I'm speaking today in support of HF2950, but specifically to the short call substitute language, not only as a school administrator, but also with the support of MASPA, MSBA, MREA, and AMSD today. So we're in support in order to change the requirements of substitute teachers and provide some flexibility and relief to school districts, teachers, and students. And I speak on behalf of Border City. Moorhead is a rural district that sits on the border of Minnesota and North Dakota and is considered to be a part of a three-city metro area of Fargo, West Fargo, and Moorhead. And while Moorhead has a population of about 44,000, the area as a whole has a population of about 200,000 that live and work across state lines. Our current student population is about 7,100 with about 1,300 permanent and substitute employees. 46% of those are licensed teaching staff. Our area has had significant substitute shortages over the past few years, which occurred far before COVID, but has been exacerbated by COVID. And this is a Fargo and Moorhead concern. It's also been exacerbated by low unemployment rates, good economic development, and significant increases in student enrollment. And while that's a positive result of community growth, it creates a strain on the availability of licensed teachers and affects pools of individuals who have typically been employed in substitute positions. We've also seen a general decrease in applicants for teaching positions and also now see fewer students entering the teaching profession as an area with three colleges locally. Some of our local data. On average, we need about 59 teacher subs per day. On average, we're down 29 teacher subs. The average subs needed per day is 88. Our highest amount of subs filled, 88. Our lowest amount filled, 29. Our subs down per day, our most has been 69 and our lowest has been 1. Average subs needed per day, and this just occurred in the month of January, 142 subs were needed one day, and our fill rate that day was around 50%. And the lowest amount needed per day was 33. So our highest fill rate in September at the beginning of school was 95%, meaning all licensed teachers who needed a sub received them at a 95% fill rate. Our lowest fill rate, again, in January was 50%, and our average fill rate is around 69%, which is down from about 94% when I started in 2012. What does it look like from a people standpoint at our lowest fill rate? That's 134 openings, 68 were filled, and 66 were unfilled. And what happens when we don't have enough substitute teachers? Students do not receive services. This may include special education, English language instruction, and supporting services in both reading and math for those needing additional help. Splitting of classes among other classes. So I take one class and I split them among two other classes. The doubling of classes. One teacher takes two classes regardless of grade or subject, doubling the number of students that they normally have in their class. And large group supervision. Placing students in cafeterias or theater spaces with one to two supervising adults. Additionally, teachers miss contractual preparation periods, lunch times, and administrators are in the classroom subbing rather than being available to help students, staff, and parents. In addition to the sub concern, we have a unique challenge in North Dakota, Minnesota, being on the border as we compete for the same licensed and short call substitutes. However, in North Dakota, the substitute requirements are significantly less. An official transcript documenting a minimum of 48 semester hours of college coursework, a successful background check by the state licensing organization, and an online application is required to substitute teach in North Dakota. The inequity creates further complication to an already urgent shortage of substitutes for Moorhead, and our regional area, which also includes several small districts such as Dilworth, Barnesville, and Rothsay. This bill would be beneficial to all Minnesota school districts, teachers, and students. However, for a border city with vastly different requirements than a neighboring state, it's imperative to allow for our flexibility in hiring for our districts. So thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we will have Deb Hinton, and on deck, we have Roger Aronson. Deb Hinton, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Richardson and members of the committee. I am Deb Hinton, Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. And today I will be speaking on behalf of education organizations representing superintendents and school board members from throughout Greater Minnesota and the metropolitan area. We support the efforts to address the critical staffing shortages and online learning issues school districts are experiencing. We believe the efforts must go further to produce long-term solutions and strongly urge an expedited approach to the staffing crisis. Our school districts need options and additional measures in place now that would allow them local control and the ability to hire credentialed personnel. House File 2950 is a good first step in addressing challenges we've heard all year long. School districts have prioritized in-person learning for their students during this school year. Yet due to staff illness and subsequent challenges in finding substitutes, some have had to switch to online learning. School districts need your help in providing flexibility in staffing their classrooms, both in the short and long term. School district leaders have related that before changing learning models to online learning because of staffing shortages, they sometimes had grouped large numbers of classes together in gymnasiums, cafeterias, and auditoriums, as you've heard from previous testifiers, most often with teachers supervising large numbers of students during the teacher's prep time, adding more work to the typical teacher's schedule. Our schools have had an all-hands-on-deck approach all year long, and yet classroom coverage, if a teacher is absent, has been spotty at best. We are proud of our educators who have filled in wherever needed and their commitment to prioritize in-person learning. The short call substitute teacher pilot, along with the ability to hire an educator with a lapsed license working on meeting renewal requirements, should result in more substitutes available. However, these again are short-term solutions expiring in 2023. School districts need long-term solutions enacted now that will ensure they don't have to repeat burdensome measures taken this school year. As you know, House File 2950 also has provisions for crisis online learning and crisis e-learning. This language for crisis online learning is welcomed. We have concerns about the expiration date for the crisis e-learning language and only allowing up to 5 days for this school year. We believe that school leaders and school boards are best positioned to make those decisions. Thank you for this opportunity to testify. I thank you as well for your service, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Roger Aronson. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Roger Aronson. I represent the State Elementary Principals Association and the State Secondary Principals Association. We're happy to be here today to express our support for House File 2950. And we thank Representative Hassan and the department as well for bringing this bill forward. Committee's well aware of the challenges that face schools over the past 2 years. The school district response to COVID began in March of 2020, and COVID exposed several vulnerabilities in the staffing of our schools. This bill is a first step to try to address some of those vulnerabilities. Principals had significant difficulty in filling positions in multiple areas. As you've heard from prior witnesses, we've had coverage of classrooms by teachers who are using their prep times. Principals, district office staff, everyone is pitching in, as Deb Hinton just told you, all hands are on deck on this. I might add that principals all maintain their teacher licenses, or the vast majority of them do. And I think every teacher in, or every principal in Minnesota would tell you that they have all been in a classroom at some time covering for a teacher who's not able to be there. Superintendent Hinton's comments reflect the experience of school districts, as do the HR director, Demmer, from Moorhead. And we join them in their comments. I might say that the proposed language here is understandably cautious with the limitation of days and the sunsetting of effective dates It's our hope that as you continue to work on this bill, we can look further out, because I think as you would might expect, these staffing issues are not going away. And I think as our other colleagues have mentioned, there are more deep systemic changes that need to occur to help us in the staffing of our schools. The challenge for this committee and the legislature is how do you effectively fast track this legislation? People will tell you that we need these provisions enacted as quickly as possible. We need them now. And if you're going to provide a solution for us, the sooner the better. We thank you for your work on this and just a very good way to start out the year and seeing what we can do to address these crises in schools. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we will move on to Representative Mueller, who has a DE-1 amendment. Would you like to move your amendment, Representative Mueller?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to move the DE amendment, please.
Having moved that, Representative Mueller, would you please present your amendment for the committee?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. As we know, we've been listening to all of these testifiers talk about the dire shortages that we have in substitute teachers. This is not something that has happened just now, nor is this something that has happened because of the pandemic. This has been something that has been going on for years. Since I was elected to the legislature, I have been talking and working on legislation to expand opportunities for substitute teachers. And last year at this time, I carried House File 699, in which case that was laid over and was not included in the omnibus bill. It was, however, passed bipartisanly in the Senate last year. Just because we didn't pass it doesn't mean that the problem went away. And we started hearing all of the problems that we've been talking about already today. People covering for classes, parents, if necessary. I have all these articles talking about parents who have been asked to come in and cover classes. All of the things that people were concerned about with House File 699 last year have come true this year because we didn't take action now. So what I have done since that time is that I have been working behind the scenes with people from the majority party with Pelsby about how we can create a hybrid bill that would provide extended and expanded opportunity for those to become substitute teachers, while also providing flexibility and autonomy for our districts to hire substitute teachers in their community. What you have before you in the DE amendment are two tracks. Track one, which is in section two, is the language that Pelsby offered, which is the extended and expanded opportunities for our substitute teachers. Must have at least an associate's degree, must have worked as a paraprofessional or support staff for a year, or could be someone who is in a teacher prep program. That language was already decided and already given or provided to me by Pelsby when I spoke to them about this last December. This would allow a substitute teacher to be licensed through Pelsby and be able to teach at various school districts in the state of Minnesota. Section three is the language from House File 699, which has been asked for by many of the lobbyist groups that you have heard from today. They have asked for increased flexibility and autonomy so that they can hire people from their own community. This track in section three would allow students to have, or allow teachers, districts to hire those who qualify under the tier one license or are working as a paraprofessional in that district. And the district would be able to hire them to be a substitute teacher for that district only. And the requirements is that they would then also pass a background check. And then the school district would report to Pelsby who they have hired. As a compromise, we also put in language that any complaints that were offered or that were given about a substitute teacher must be reported to Pelsby. with the understanding that if this person decides to go to get a license from PELSBY, that they can also use these complaints or any of those reports in deciding on when they, if they give a license, that would allow them to teach in other school districts. This language has been, I believe, is a good hybrid that will allow for expanded opportunity and autonomy and flexibility for our school districts. I have worked with PELSBY. I want to thank Representative Moeller for working with me. I want to thank Adosh Uni and for, I know PELSBY had talked with me over in December. And I believe that this hybrid language will be a better solution and a long-term solution for our districts so that they can fill the desperate staffing needs that they have right now. The reason it is a DE amendment is because I believe that this needs to be passed now. And some of the other provisions we have already heard are not supported by some of the people our testimonies that we've heard from today. And this language in the short call substitute is something that is bipartisan and that can be agreed upon and can be passed now, which is the reason why I think we need to have it. So Madam Chair, I'd stand for questions and comments, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Representative Mueller. Vice Chair Hassan, to the amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I want to thank Rep. Mueller for working on this issue and wanting to make a difference, just like we all want to help our schools and our districts. I respectfully decline this amendment, not to mention that it's a delete all amendment. This amendment doesn't require background checks before the teacher is in front of the students and takes PELSBY licensure out of the equation, thus preventing effective monitoring of teacher misconduct. And this change is also lasting 3 years rather than just being limited to the current crisis. Please vote no on this amendment. Thank you.
Thank you, Vice Chair Hassan. I think at this moment we'll open it up to member questions and discussion. I see Representative Erickson has her hand raised. We'll start with you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'd like to call for a roll call on this DE amendment.
A roll call being requested. We will have a roll call. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, the flexibility that Representative Mueller is providing in this DE is essential at this point because we know across the nation, across our state, we have a workforce shortage. So the more flexibility we can provide, as she has worked with both PELSBY and with members in the majority party, is really going to benefit us most immediately, which is what we need to make sure that our students are receiving the kind of instruction that they need. I'm going to point to the fact that I think that what Representative Mueller said about being able to put aside other parts of this bill are important because face-to-face learning is essential in the reading and even in the math realm. I've been looking at the scores in reading in the MCAs from 2015 to 2019. And not only is the decline, in other words, the gap growing among our students of color, but it is also growing among our white students. And so we're seeing a 30 to 40% difference between proficiency of all students and our minority students, but even a decline of several percentage points, I believe it's even up to 10 among our white students. So face-to-face learning is essential to teach reading. And I would hope that we have a proposal that comes forth that's gonna focus on that. Or as the commissioner said the other day about online learning, it's that online learning as it is in statute also requires the option for parents to have face-to-face. So let's not forget that when online learning comes up again, that we consider the needs of our children. And to get our fourth graders reading at proficiency, or at least when they enter fourth grade, is going to take an all-out effort. So to have capable substitute teachers, as we can have in both tiers one and two, as well as 3 and 4 is needed. We can't discount 1 and 3 or 1 and 2, but we also have to focus on that face-to-face. Our teachers need to be able to teach our children learning with them in the classroom. And with that, Madam Chair and members, I hope that you would support this DE amendment. And I'll say more later if I get a chance. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you. I think my question would be for Commissioner Mueller, and why don't we wait until after and we're on final discussion on the bill?
We will then move on to Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'll just make a note that I think House Media identified Representative Mueller as Representative Mueller. It's probably not the first or the last time that will happen. I do appreciate Representative Mueller, your reaching out to me over the interim to talk about this issue. We did have a really great meeting with Pelosi. I guess where I'm at, though, with your amendment, well, my first question is, why do you think Section 3 is necessary?
Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Mueller. This is important because we've heard from many people from across the state, from the school districts, that there is still a need for them to be able to hire people like their community experts. This is something where if maybe they didn't get a sub right within the morning right away and something happens, it's going to be much easier for them to pull from a pool of people that they already have. Plus, this will be available for those who are already in the community, and it's going to be something that's going to be easier for them to assimilate into the school already. So this is something we've heard from school districts that they want. This is heard what we've heard from other lobbyist groups, that this is who represent these school districts, that they want that flexibility to be able to hire without having to go through the process of having to get a license that will allow them to teach in other districts. This would only be for that one district.
Representative Mueller, follow up.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I guess what concerns me is that a person could do this through many different districts, and there isn't really any oversight for that person if they have an issue, because the reporting of complaints, there's not a time frame with that, and then there's no teeth because they don't have a license. So I could see that somebody would have an issue with one school district, move on to the next district, and that new district wouldn't have that information. And because we don't know when it would be reported to Pelosi, and even if it is, there's no oversight. So I think that's where I have concerns about your bill with your amendment. And I really appreciate all the work you've done on this. And I know that all of us on this committee want to reach a solution and reach a solution quickly. But we want to also make sure that students are adequately protected, and that's where I think this one falls short. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Mueller. I see Representative Christensen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just have a question about the substitutes, and I so agree with you. I'm still very close in my school system here in Stillwater, and there's a major, major problem. I'm just curious, if a para ends up subbing for a teacher, how does pay scale work?
Representative Mueller. Oh.
No, that's okay. Go ahead.
Representative Mueller.
That is something that would have to be, I would assume that they would also get the regular sub pay, or that they would, that would be something for their unions that they would have to debate and negotiate.
Follow up, Representative Christensen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I agree, and I suspect that is the answer. But I was just curious how that would work, or if there's been any discussion about that. We could also look at, and I'm going to bring this up later. I'm going to wait because it's opening a whole new can of worms that we don't need today. So I'll talk about it later. The fact that student teachers have to leave their current job, give up their current benefits to student teach unpaid. You know, it seems like there's a whole pool there of people too that have gone through the training. So anyway, that's my 2 cents. But thanks much. I am going to investigate the pay scale thing. Thanks much.
Thank you, Representative Christensen. It does not appear that there are any other questions for Representative Mueller at this time. Representative Mueller renews her motion to adopt the DE1 amendment. A roll call has been requested. The clerk will take the roll on the amendment.
Chair Richardson?
No.
Vice Chair Hassan?
No.
Representative Erickson?
Yes.
Representative Bennett?
Yes.
Representative Berg?
No.
Representative Bowe?
Yes.
Representative Christensen?
No.
Representative Drazkowski?
Aye.
Representative Edelson?
No.
Representative Feist?
No.
Representative Frazier?
No.
Representative Jordan?
No.
Representative Keeler?
No.
Representative Moeller?
No.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes yes.
Representative Poston?
Poston, yes.
Representative Scott?
Aye.
Representative Erdahl?
Aye.
Representative Wasilik?
No.
Madam Chair, there are 11 ayes and 8 nays.
Thank you. Thank you, Isabel. Members, with a vote of 11 ayes, or I'm sorry, Isabel, can you repeat that again?
Yes, that's 11 ayes and 8 nays.
Thank you. With 11 ayes and...
Madam Chair, there are 11 nays.
There's 11 nays and 8 ayes. Thank you.
Sorry about that.
We'll be happy to take the 11 ayes.
Yeah. Thank you, Representative Erickson. So with that vote, the motion does not prevail. The DE1 amendment is not adopted. Representative Erdahl, we will move to your question for Commissioner Mueller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I was just wondering, especially in light of the testimony of the Moorhead official, are you doing anything to support, or are you considering anything that would allow for more reciprocity with our neighboring states regarding teachers?
Commissioner Mueller.
Sorry, I was having trouble getting off mute. Thank you, Chair Richardson and Representative Erdahl. I know that we have had conversations about how it is that we will be able to provide support as we have educators coming into the state of Minnesota. Also, that is part of what we would be able to do is looking at that across the from one state to the next in looking at the ability to be able to be a short call sub or a sub in general. And I know that Alex is here from Pelsby as well and can speak to that.
Representative Erdahl, follow-up, or would you
like to... thank you, Madam Chair. And I would appreciate hearing from Pelsby on this issue as well, because it is an important issue. I'm sure that Moorhead would like to be bringing teachers who are certified in North Dakota, certified in Fargo, to come across the border and teach. And is Pelsby looking at doing anything in this regard?
Executive Director Lazy, would...
Yeah, I'm here.
There you are.
Hi, Madam Chair. My name is Alex Lietz. I'm the Executive Director of the Professional Educator Licensing and Standards Board, PELLY. Thank you, Representative Erdahl, for the question. So there's two different pieces for reciprocity. With tiered licensure, the legislature did an amazing job of making reciprocity with other states extremely easy. So someone who is trained in another state or licensed in another state can come to Minnesota and only need to take Minnesota-specific exams, content pedagogy. And our board, about 4 months ago, just passed a resolution that we would allow those exams, if they were content pedagogy-based exams, in the other states equivalent to ours, that we would accept those. So now the reciprocity, once that is implemented in March, will be very easy for individuals that have taken content pedagogy tests in another state. As for the short call substitute piece, which we're discussing today, if House File 2950 is passed, that there would be immediate reciprocity. Those individuals would just need to apply for a license. in Minnesota, but they wouldn't, we would have the exact same qualifications, which is the associate's degree. Actually, I think they said it might be 48 credits, so there might need to be a, you know, small change there, but the associate's degree would be pretty close to that in North Dakota, and do the background check and be able to issue the license.
Follow up, Representative Riddle.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair, and just want to encourage to continue doing those types of things. I think it's important to make it as easy as we can, especially in the current situation that we have, for teachers from other states to come in and teach here, as long as they are qualified.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Erdahl. Representative Wasilewicz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just, this is more of a general question, but since we are talking about sort of the shortage of subs, if maybe, you know, one of the folks who represents administrators or Ms. Daimer from Moorhead could talk about what sort of, if you're talking with subs, what sort of things are you hearing about, you know, why people aren't subbing? Is it that folks have retired and are no longer interested? I'm interested to hear sort of some of that reasoning. I think this is a short-term measure to address things in the short term, but I think, as others have noted, we need more long-term solutions. I'm wondering if you could just briefly talk about, you know, what you're hearing in conversations from folks who usually sub about why they're not stepping back into the classroom.
Thank you, Rep. Wasilewicz. That was to Kristen Daimer. Ms. Daimer?
Well, it's a variety of reasons. I think you're right. This is a short-term solution to, as I noted, a long-term issue. This has been a concern for us, and it's very regional for us with, like I said, the growth, right? So the usual group of students or teachers that we would have in a substitute pool doesn't exist any longer, partially because the three districts are growing significantly. But in reference to why subs aren't coming back, could be a variety of reasons. It could be they've gotten a job as a teacher within our own district or within another district. Those who are licensed to teach, ultimately, that's what their intent is, to go teach and have a classroom. So a substitute pool has never been a pool that has generally remained. Quite frequently, you have retired teachers who then join the substitute pool. I would say that has decreased, simply because they don't want to teach any longer, but we have a lot of substitutes who are previously retired teachers. We don't have a significant amount of subs who, I think one kind of side conversation is the short call substitute process, where you can have a bachelor's degree and be a substitute, which is the current requirement. We generally, I would say my first 5 years in Moorhead, never used to approve those. We had enough substitutes who were licensed within the licensure system that we didn't need to approve those. They were very sparing. It's become more significant in the last 5 years that we have more substitutes who join the substitute pool with a bachelor's degree, so they're interested in being in that role.
Follow up, Representative Wasilewicz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That was what I was looking for. Thanks.
Thank you. Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to follow up on Representative Wasilewicz's question, I guess. In 2016, I was actually the district substitute coordinator in Moorhead, which for any of you who have ever worked in the school district, that's not an overly glamorous job, but it takes a lot of work behind the scenes. And I remember in 2016, we were devastated if we were only 70% full. And I just want to go back to the data that Kristen shared in the same district, that right now our average is 69%. And I can't imagine that, like, we're the only district that is seeing and feeling this. Some of the things that are brought up in the border city and some of the concerns is actually the difference in pay as well. You know, we have the same pool of people who are deciding whether or not they want to serve as a substitute in Minnesota or North Dakota. And the pay is greater in North Dakota, and there's less requirement of hours as well. And so I just want us to continue to look at that space. I'm glad that Representative Erdahl brought up border cities, because it is something that's really unique in this space. But I'm glad that we're talking about it and moving forward, because I think all of our districts will feel a positive impact if we can get more supports in the classrooms. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Keeler. Representative Bo, I saw your hand go up. Just want to confirm that you don't have comments? Okay. Representative Druskowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I think I pushed the thumbs up at one point. I thought I was pushing the hand, but you're over 50 and your eyes don't work as well. So thank you, Madam Chair. I heard one comment early. I thought that a crisis was described as a deer running through the school. Is that what I heard? And I didn't catch who the testifier was. I'm curious, where is that what I heard, Madam Chair?
Commissioner Mueller, I saw you turn your camera on. I don't know if you have a comment.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Richardson and Representative Druskowski. That is true. We have had schools that have had a deer run through them that destroys the classroom or areas of the building where they have needed to pull students for a day or a couple of days. And this would allow them to continue to have online learning outside of the school day while they clean up their classroom instead of having a non-learning day.
Follow-up, Representative Druskowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That confirms my reading and understanding of the bill. Holy moly, a deer running in the school would take 10 minutes for three guys and three gals to chase a deer out, and maybe they could put the kids to work to clean the chairs up afterwards. Certainly not a crisis, and it really underscores what we have going on here. Instead of rallying our education system in a time when the crisis is in learning, because of the online learning that we've been doing so much of, at a time when there's no reason to be doing it. Madam Chair, Representative Hassan, our schools are open in my district and they're going forward. I don't know why we're trying to invent crises at a time when we need to rally our education system to work harder and put more output out in order to try to catch our kids up instead of heading in the other direction. This policy that we're pursuing in this bill, in section one of the bill, is like paddling upstream. Madam Chair, Representative Hassan, this is the wrong direction. I don't know what we're doing. Instead of rallying our education system to run towards the kids and help them learn, we're having them run the other way to their basements and work less instead of working more. I don't know that this is in the interest of our kids. I don't know where this comes from. It seems to me the Department of Education has written this or the teachers union. I don't know which, maybe both, but this is not going to help our kids. We're going the wrong direction. I'm flabbergasted, Madam Chair, that this exists in a bill in front of a House Education Committee today with everything the members, all smart and honorable people on the committee, know about the failings that we have had over the last 2 years in our education system because of bad policy around a pandemic of fear. We need to get rid of the pandemic of fear so that our kids can learn again and we can stop the intergenerational theft that the old people in our culture have placed on the young people because of our fear. Our kids are ready to go. This virus isn't hurting them. They got a better chance of getting run over by the school bus than hurt by the flu or COVID or any of the other diseases that might be going around. Madam Chair, please vote no. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Druskowski. Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to highlight to Representative Druskowski, I think the whole issue was really covered today, is that when teachers are out because of the pandemic, we have sometimes teachers teaching, I don't know, maybe 60 kids, which isn't working for those kids. We have teachers that we have staff social workers in classrooms. We have principals that are teaching. So we can't just wish this away. And so I just want to thank Representative Hassan for bringing the bill.
Thank you, Representative Edelson. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I have some questions for the commissioner because I presume this language has come from the department and perhaps even from PELSVI. So if the commissioner would respond, I'd appreciate it. Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, in your section one of the bill, what do you plan to do to close the achievement gap, especially in reading and math,
when this crisis section really pushes online learning and dishonors the fact that what you said the other day is that if there's online learning, there's always an option for face-to-face as well. How are you going to handle that, considering our children have lost so much learning in literacy, in reading? It's just awful to know that they have lost basically a whole year of their schooling.
Commissioner Mueller.
Thank you, Chair Richardson and Representative Erickson. I think there's a couple of things that are important. It really does actually keep instruction happening in the building that is consistent with what we have always expected and consistent with in-person learning. It is in those times when, again, the example of if there are pipes burst, if there has been any other type of crisis, which is very clearly articulated in the language, that if you would need to then be out of the building for some reason, that there would still be learning happening versus having to have days when you are out for a crisis and there is absolutely no learning happening. So it actually maintains the consistency. I think the second part of your question is really around what are we talking about for closing the achievement gap? And those are the reasons that we've identified language not only in the budget and that we're going through the finance, but also in policy to ensure that we are putting forward evidence-based science reading and literacy practices, funding for additional support in those types of evidence-based practices and the science of reading programs, as well as supporting math and mental health. And there's also some policy language that will be built into the policy bill that you all will be able to hear as well, that will help to support this ongoing conversation about academics, social emotional learning, and mental health.
Representative Erickson, follow up.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. So, Commissioner, is your use of primary in line 1.9 then intended for us to understand that there will also be face-to-face learning going on in this crisis online learning provision?
In the, Chair Richardson and Representative Erickson, what it means is that if for some reason there is a, if the building were to burn down, if there were some, this allows for that, this for up to X amount of days would be that they would be able to move to an online learning environment, but then would have to come back into in-person learning. The expectation follows the statute that it is all students must be in-person learning unless there is a crisis, and this would allow for online learning outside of the classroom if there is a crisis.
Madam Chair, thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Commissioner, I think then your language should be tightened so that anyone reading this understands clearly that there is a parental option. So I suggest that you look at that before this bill moves on. I also have a question about, and maybe this is directed to Mr. Luisi, but in the short call substitute teacher pilot language in this proposal, there's a five-day expedited period for the license to be granted. But what happens when that expedited process expires? I mean, is there an appeal? Is there a reconsideration? I mean, what happens? Because if the license is denied, we have really no expedited process. So could someone answer that question for me?
Mr. Luisi?
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, my presumption is it would be the same as for someone applying for a license where we have 30 days to issue the license, a traditional license. If it is denied, that they can go through the appeals process, that this pilot section does not negate the appeals process that is also in statute.
Madam Chair, Erickson. Thank you. So, Mr. Luisi, doesn't Representative Mueller's bill, though, allow for direct hiring authority? That would be probably more important to us in this critical period of trying to find substitutes?
Mr. Lindsay?
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, thank you for the question. It is very interesting to see the two bills back to back here, the delete all amendment in this bill, because you'll notice section two of Representative Mueller's bill and section three of the delete and section three are very similar. And we believe that those pieces will address the concern. So really what I believe you're asking is just that section three of the delete all amendment, if that does something additional that is needed, What we hear from districts that are requesting sort of the ability to just hire someone without Pelsby's involvement is that urgency. Because an individual has to go through a background check through Pelsby, which takes 14 days, plus we have 30 days to issue that license, that can often be too long for districts that need short call substitutes right away. We believe 2950, House File 2950, addresses that by the 5-day expedited and allowing us to issue a license pending a background check. So really what happens in Section 3 in the Delete All Amendment that has us concerned is while it might save you a couple days in that process, it takes away that ability for us to track someone with their license in an ethics standpoint. So we often see short call subs come through our ethics division for, let's say, inappropriate boundaries, and we're able to take action against that license because their license and it falls under that statute, and that action becomes public so that every district, when they're hiring that person, can see that action. Even with the reporting requirements in Section 3 of the Delete All, it doesn't have the ability for that report to be public. It would just be for Pelsby's. We would just receive that report. It doesn't talk about when that report is received. So that individual, while the Section 3, it's district specific, they could then go to another district. There's also some confusion in that Delete All that I saw between Section 2 and Section 3. If Section 2 is a joint application with the district and the individual, I don't see why someone would do that. It's almost like Section 3 completely overrules Section 2 of that Delete All. So yes, I believe it might expedite things a couple days faster, but we think that the safety of students, it's okay if we're able to expedite within 5 days. That's much faster than the 30 to 44 days that it takes right now when we can't expedite an application, we can't issue it pending a background check.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Gugliese, one final question. You know, the conditional Tier 3 license, why is that necessary when a Tier 2 would work just as well? It just seems to me that Pelsby is trying to disregard our Tiers 1 and 2 as very capable tiers for our substitute teachers and otherwise. So why do we need this conditional?
Mr. Luzzi.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, first of all, this isn't Pelsby's bill. We strongly support Tier 1 and Tier 2, the ability for that to move folks into the profession. I will remind legislators that the 2 years ago, or in 2020, a bill was passed to do this conditional Tier 3 license to allow people to get in the classroom without those tests because
yes.
of the concerns around COVID. So this is just doing the same thing. And the difference here is that an individual who completes a teacher prep program might not know that they can start applying for jobs without a license, which you would need for a Tier 2. A Tier 2 license requires a job offer. So this would allow that person to receive the license and then start applying for jobs. So while definitely you're accurate, and at Allies, I think we testified about it earlier, that the qualifications would be the same for a Tier 2. It really helps for our teachers who just left teacher preparation to be able to get that license first and then start applying for jobs.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one final statement. Mr. Luizzi, thank you for admitting that this is not Pelsby language. I'm glad to hear that. Obviously, this must be union language, and that disappoints me because we need flexibility at this time so desperately. And I'm glad that the Professional Educators Licensing and Standards Board is not out in the front burner on this. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question would be for, I believe, the commissioner. I guess the bill's author could answer it too, but a feeling she may defer to the commissioner. So my question, Madam Chair and members, I have a friend that's a teacher, and she alerted me to some of these TikTok challenges that kids were putting out, and it caused great alarm amongst staff and faculty. And so I'm wondering if a group of students putting out a TikTok challenge that caused administrators to believe that there might be something that, you know, whether it was punch a teacher or whatever, slap a teacher, whatever the thing was earlier this year, would that fall under this crisis online learning so that school could be with a 24-hour notice shutdown?
Commissioner Mueller.
Thank you, Chair Richardson. Thank you, Representative Scott. I think that there are pieces within that that are identified within the language in and of itself, and then there is the administrative component that aligns to ensuring that this helps to identify what it is meant by a crisis and how that works. I think that it's looking at, this is not for an everyday use. It is in those extraneous and types of variables that happen in a very rare and instance and occasion. And it's, and I'll have to be honest that my husband is a teacher in a classroom, and so those are very frightening TikToks, and they are inappropriate and should never be a part of what our students are thinking is something that is interesting or fun to do. And so I want to just make sure that we are saying that publicly, that it is incredibly inappropriate no matter what. The safety and security of our students and staff and families is the most important piece. So if there are not enough staff to be able to come into a building, that is where we have things that we need to be able to consider. But those crisis pieces are pieces that we know are based in local control, are decisions that the school board and or the superintendent would need to be able to make. It's not a decision that would be made by the Department of Education or anybody outside of that particular school setting, knowing that that is the responsibility of that school board and that superintendent.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I'm not sure. So the answer to the question is yes, a TikTok challenge like that could shut down a school.
Representative Mueller. Oh, I'm sorry, Commissioner Mueller.
It's okay.
So confusing.
I figured it would be bound to happen at some point. That's okay. Thank you. Madam Chair and Representative Scott, really, again, that is going to go back to local control, but there are definitions within the language that spell out what a crisis is. And that would, again, go back to places where if there was a building issue or if there was something that is happening where you don't have enough people to be able to run your school building.
So
Representative Scott.
Madam Chair, so yeah, obviously I'm concerned that having a law like this in place is going to allow for those people that do these TikTok challenges and similar things to run the show. And if there's a statute like this in place, they're going to take advantage of it. And, you know, I see this bill as something that is keeping our kids from getting back in the classroom as opposed to the opposite of that. And we have no idea yet what we're in for 10, 20, 30 years down the road, the ramifications of the learning loss that we've already had with our students over these past few years, much of it unnecessary. And my concern, of course, with going online is we know the statistics and the reports that we've heard during all this online learning of kids that weren't even calling in, checking into their classes. The failure rate of classes is going way up. The data is not on the side of implementing this bill. The data is quite the opposite. The data shows that kids need to be in the classroom. We've operated without a bill like this for how many years in the state of Minnesota? If the pipes burst and the kids can't be there, that's one thing. But schools are already figuring that out. I don't think this legislation is necessary. I think it's going to further put our kids behind. And I feel like this is an excuse to not have in-class learning. And it could be used as that. And that is very troubling to me. I don't see this bill, again, as necessary. And, you know, I wanted to speak a little bit about the substitute teacher issue that we have. And Representative Mueller did say that last year a bipartisan bill passed out of the Senate. We may not be here today having this discussion had that bill been allowed to come and pass through the House. So either there's urgency or there isn't. And I think there was urgency last year. And the bill should have been passed. There was no good reason not to pass it then. So I'm disappointed that we're, you know, even having to have these discussions today when much of this problem could have been prevented by passing a bill last year. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Scott. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd just like to draw, there was discussion from the commissioner about the definition of crisis learning period. The lines 1.11 to 1.14 are written very, very loosey-goosey. A school could interpret this to mean almost anything. Crisis learning period means a period of time, okay, and I saw the up to 4 days. Is a result of an unforeseeable incident or situation. That gives examples. Doesn't necessarily say it's limited to that, but just gives some loosey-goosey examples that is unsafe or untenable. Up to the interpretation of the school board, they could actually, or the administration, they could actually say that it's because a deer ran through the school for 10 minutes. This is written very, very poorly, needs a lot more deliberation and time than has been provided here. This is just very bad policy. Madam Chair, I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Representative Drazkowski. Not seeing any other hands raised, Vice Chair Hassan, final comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Before I forget, I request a roll call. I think, good.
We'll give you a roll call. Roll call has been
requested. Okay. I thank you for a lively discussion today. This bill is not promoting online learning. It's my understanding that we have an online learning as an option for emergencies. This is a good bill, and it addresses the teacher shortage crisis in our schools and our teachers have been dealing with. This bill will be beneficial to all students and teachers across the state. I humbly ask for your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Vice Chair Hassan. Vice Chair Hassan renews her motion to refer House File 2950 as amended to the General Register. A roll call having been requested, the clerk will now take the roll.
Chair Richardson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Hassan?
None votes aye.
Representative Erickson?
Erickson votes no.
Representative Bennett?
No.
Representative Berg?
Yes.
Representative Bo?
Bo votes no.
Representative Christensen?
Aye.
Representative Drazkowski?
No.
Representative Edelson?
Aye.
Representative Feist?
Aye.
Representative Frazier?
Aye.
Representative Jordan?
Aye.
Representative Keeler?
Aye.
Representative Moeller?
Aye.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes no.
Representative Poston?
Poston, no.
Representative Scott?
No.
Representative Erdahl?
No.
Representative Wasilewicz?
Aye.
Madam Chair, there are 11 ayes and 8 nays.
Thank you. There being 11 ayes and 8 nays, the motion prevails and the bill as amended is referred to the General Register. Just a reminder for members, on Wednesday, February 9th, we will be hearing the Teachers of Color Act bill, and there being no further business before the committee, we are adjourned.